Well, each generation is currently navigating a unique part of the retirement planning experience. And with so many baby boomers preparing for the transition into retirement and the early half of Generation Z, if we go the other direction, taking their initial steps into the career field, these major life events come with a handful of financial planning questions. And so what we're going to do on today's episode is share insights into the unique concerns that sort of echo across these different age groups. These are the retirement questions that every generation is asking. We're going to walk you through baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, and Gen Z, and tell you at least two important questions each generation needs to consider right now. Let's get to it.
It's time for Reengineering Your Finances with the founder of CP Weldy Group, Charles Weldy.
Well, thanks for joining us again on Reengineering Your Finances. Walter Storholt here with certified financial planner Charles Weldy, also a CPA and the founder of CP Weldy Group. Charles, at the time of our recording today, you are approaching the final days of tax season. So I know you are very much looking forward to the other side of that barrier, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, tax season this year is going fairly smooth. We got like four great preparers. I review most of the returns, and for the most part, you know, I really haven't had, you know, to work much overtime, which is good. So definitely a successful tax season. I like being busy early in the year, and spring's right around the corner. So hopefully a couple more weeks, we're raring to go, get out there on the golf course.
Yeah, very nice. I like that. That's actually probably a pretty decent flow to life, right? Like your first 4.5 months of the year, you just go hardcore, and then, you know, you're able, not that you're not working the rest of the year, but it's just that feverish pace then drops off for the rest of the year, and then you just kind of pick it back up in the new year next time around.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fantastic. I've never been a skier, so I don't miss skiing. You know, winter sports, you know, hey, I can take them or leave them. I'm not a hockey player, so, you know, when it's cold and, you know, windy outside and snowing and, you know, the weather's not that great, you know, you're in here working, catching up on things, maybe getting a good start to the new year.
Buckle down and do your taxes. There you go. I love it. Well, hey, let's walk through each of the generations here and cover these top questions that they need to be thinking about. Again, two per generation. And we'll start with the boomers. Hey, they're most urgent right now, Charles, since they're already in retirement or more and more of them getting there right now. We're defining this as approximately, you know, everybody's different definition of these generations is a little bit different, but we'll say approximately 1946 to 1964 when we're talking about births. So they're at or near retirement age already. And with their golden years around the corner or upon them, many have questions about the best way to prepare specifically for that transition. So you've sent me the advanced list of the questions we're going to pose for each of these generations. So the first one that you wanted to cover was, what's the best approach for transitioning from a steady income to retirement withdrawals? That must be the sticking point for a lot of people, right? Like, how do we reverse the river?
Most people are familiar with the money cycle, and the money cycle is like, hey, you know, for the majority of our career, we're in the accumulation phase. We're putting away as much as we possibly can, hopefully making a decent rate of return for that eventual day that we'll retire and be able to like switch to the distribution stage. So, you know, the money cycle for most people is accumulation up to a point and then turn on the distribution, you know, funnel. And what I find in my practice and really through my affiliation with the group I'm affiliated with is that most people, and this is critical, they miss, you know, this middle piece called the preservation piece. And why that's important, Walter, is that once you no longer get a paycheck, you're going to need X amount of dollars each and every month to be there because the paycheck's not there. And you need to have a preservation piece. And what I mean by that is that's a portion of your investments that are invested more conservatively so that when you need that money, you know, that money's there. It's not going to go way up. It's not going to go way down. You know, it's going to be managed like more conservatively to give you the income that you need. And if you get that preservation piece funded properly, not too much, not too little, it gives you permission to put the remaining balance maybe in a later bucket for growth and eventually replenishing that preservation piece. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah. Reversing that flow is way easier than it sounds. And so that's why that, I imagine, is first on your list for baby boomers to start to discuss. All right. The second major question that baby boomers need to answer that you've identified here, Charles, is how do I manage the risks of volatility in the market as I approach retirement? And that's another huge one, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like to, you know, when you say volatility, I like to segregate volatility into two components, short-term volatility and long-term. Now, short-term volatility is like, hey, the market's down when you need money. That's going to actually like really do you a severe injustice, because if you pull money out of an account that's down in value, you will never get that money back again. So, you know, how do I manage like market volatility? Again, you know, kind of piggybacking off of my first answer, the money cycle, having that preservation piece, right? Not getting greedy, trying to make, you know, a big return on your whole portfolio. Segregate your portfolio into maybe two components. One would be for conservative income that you're going to need, you know, monthly for at least like 10 years. And the remaining balance invested for long-term growth. And short-term volatility will really, you know, kill you literally if you don't address it. And the way to address it is to have more conservative investments in that, what I call the soon bucket. And volatility in the long term is your ally or your friend, because the volatility is the reason why you get the premium return generally on the stocks that you have in there. So, you know, there's no way around, you know, market volatility, but we can plan for short-term market volatility by having an adequate amount in the preservation piece, and long-term volatility, we can embrace it by having the remaining balance in a long-term, you know, bucket, so to speak, taking advantage of the market ups and downs. In the short term, it won't affect us, but in the long term, it should benefit us if history is any guide.
Excellent. So there you go. Recap for the baby boomers, the two things to really be concerned about. How do you make that transition to withdrawals instead of saving and getting that steady paycheck, and managing risk? The two big components for any baby boomer planning for retirement right now. All right, let's reverse just a little bit here in age as we go down to Generation X, Charles. And you know what? Generation X isn't as far away from retirement as maybe it once seemed. They're starting to get a little closer here. Typically, Generation X, defined by 1965 to 1976 birth years, kind of a narrow band in terms of generations. It seems like a lot of generations kind of go that two-decade span, but for whatever reason, X is kind of just in that one decade. They are in a stage where retirement planning is becoming increasingly important, but not quite as urgent and close as it is for baby boomers. So here's what the Generation X needs to be concerned with. Charles, you said the first question they need to be thinking about is, how can I maximize my investment returns without taking on excessive risks? Sounds to me like there's still room for risk, but we're starting that, a little bit of that transition toward thinking about risk a bit more.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, someone who's still working and they're, you know, investing for retirement, I mean, they should be a buyer of equities, like really buying like stocks or stock funds. You know, generally speaking, they're still working. They're probably in a 401k at work. Maybe some of these people get paid every other week. So if that's the case, they, you know, two times a month times 12 months, they're putting in 26, you know, different investments into like, you know, their 401k at 24 different prices. So, you know, my advice to younger people is, you know, invest as much as you can in equities. You're either going to take risk today by investing in equities for safety and security tomorrow, or you're going to be safe today just investing in like fixed income. And down the road, you're going to have like, you know, probably less of a portfolio because you were, you know, more cautious, you know, in the short term, and you're not going to have the balance you deserve in the long term by investing in fixed income. So my advice is, you know, don't invest hardly anything, you know, into fixed income. Invest most of it into equities, dollar cost average. And if history's any guide, the stocks will outperform the fixed income, you know, by the tune of 2-1, you know, after inflation. Pray if you're, you know, a saver, Generation X, pray for down markets, because when the markets go down, you're buying more at reduced prices, where just the opposite for the boomers who have these static accounts. you know, when the market goes down, some of them kind of freak out if they don't have it segregated into, you know, maybe a soon and a later bucket.
Good point for Generation X to consider there. All right, another major question that Generation X needs to think about too is how much do I need to have saved to actually retire? So is this the generation that actually starts really paying attention to that number? And the old commercials with the guys walking around with a number, like that's the target number they needed to hit to be able to retire. Is that actually a thing maybe for the Generation X time frame?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wise to have a formula, and we do have a formula, which I'll share here on the podcast. I mean, basically, you have to determine what your monthly income need's going to be. So let's just give an example. Let's just say that when one of these Generation X people retire, they need $10,000 a month before paying their income taxes. So if they need $10,000 a month, and let's assume that, you know, they're married, them and their spouse each get like total of $5,500 a month in Social Security benefits. So 10,000 is their need, 5,500 is coming in from Social Security. They're short 4,500 bucks each and every month. So the formula, Walter, is you multiply that $4,500 each month times 12 months, that's $54,000. And they need $54,000 each and every year. And I'm gonna shortchange it, I'm not gonna factor in inflation, but I'll take 54,000 a year and I'll divide that by a factor of 4.5%. Well, why I use 4.5%? Well, really, depending on their age, it could be higher than that. But 4% seems to be in the industry a decent withdrawal rate, you know. And I like using 4.5% because we have strategies that will actually allow our clients to take out a little bit more because we have their money segregated. So let's follow that example. The 10,000 they need every month, 5,500 is coming in from Social Security for husband and wife. They're short $4,500 a month. You multiply that by 12 months, they're short $54,000 a year. You take the 54,000, divide it by a factor of 4.5%. And that tells me and should tell them that ballpark, they're gonna need about $1.2 million to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. It's just a general rule, but it's better to kind of crunch those numbers and see what your target is as opposed to just flying blind.
We got to have good approaches, good angles, good numbers, good formulas. All of this works together to help point us in the right direction, and no different for the Generation X there. Now, even if you are a baby boomer or a Generation X member, just pay attention as we go through the lower generations here, the younger generations, because you may know somebody in this generation, a child, a grandchild, who might use some of this advice as well. So don't tune away just because you're not necessarily a millennial or Gen Z that will cover here over the next couple of minutes as well. Let's go on to the millennials here. So this is 1977 to 1995. Again, approximate dates of the birth dates for millennials. They're at various stages of their careers. So some a little later in their working years, others still pretty early on in their career evolution. Navigating a range of retirement-related uncertainties at this stage, because we're thinking about saving strategies, but we're also looking at this evolving landscape of retirement benefits. We're hearing that the demise of Social Security is upon us. There's all sorts of different types of plans and things at our disposal that maybe weren't there for previous generations. So there's a lot going on for us millennials to be thinking about here, Charles. So the two questions that really need to be thought through for millennials right now, the first one, how can I take advantage of employer-sponsored retirement plans like 401ks? And yeah, how much do those move the needle for folks still?
Well, I mean, obviously, these people are very young, and if they work for an employer that has a employer-sponsored 401k, I would definitely take advantage of it. I think around COVID time, a lot of these employers stopped putting in an employer match into the plan. I mean, things were tight and uncertain, and a lot of employers held back in kind of, you know, putting additional money for an employee into their account. But now, from what I read, you know, many 401k plans that are sponsored by employers, the employer is putting a certain percentage, maybe up to roughly 6% of someone's compensation into the plan. So I would definitely take advantage of that. That's free money. I mean, I think you just have to participate and put a nominal amount in, and the company will, you know, match what you're putting in, maybe up to 6%. So that's almost like a 6% raise in that example. But I would caution the young people. These people are probably too young. I mean, But you know, problem I find with people putting money in their 401k is a lot of times the employers will have not just a 401k but a Roth 401k, and it's probably advantageous to, you know, maybe put some of the pre-tax dollars, you know, into the Roth 401k, so that eventually when the people retire, they just don't have all their eggs in one basket and it's all taxable. They have a balance between tax-free and tax-deferred. So, you know, this podcast is like a little too short to get into the particulars, but what I find in my practice is that, you know, a married couple might have, like at the age of, say, 45, 48 years old, they might have joint 401ks worth $500,000. Well, the rule 72 says that 10%, at 7%, money doubles every 10 years. Well, that 500 could be $1 million in 10 years, and in 20 years, it could be $2 million without them putting another nickel in there. So it's imperative that if the employer has both a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k, that the employee take advantage of each of them, depending upon the facts and circumstances of their earnings and their account balances.
Yeah, it's a really good point and something that we need to definitely keep in top of mind if we're millennials. As well as this next question, Charles, should I rely on traditional retirement accounts or are there new and innovative options I should be thinking about?
Well, I think there's new and innovative things that people should be thinking about. But again, they should really like get educated on them first, because I was a skeptic about what I'm about to articulate here, but I'm not a skeptic anymore. And another alternative, you know, would be what they call an IUL policy. What does that stand for? IUL, Index Universal Life, IUL. And what it is, Walter, it's an insurance policy. And when you say insurance, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people are skeptical. The joke is, if you want to, you know, have that middle seat empty on an airplane, just turn to the person next to you and say, hey, yeah, I sell insurance. What do you do? And they'll get up and leave and go somewhere else. But, you know, here's the thing. There's two types of life insurance policies. One is greed and one is need. And need is like, hey, you know, I have a need policy. I bought a policy for $4,000 a year. I pay that each and every year for the rest of my life. When I die, my family gets $300,000, no questions asked, all tax free. I got it for them, not for me. But there's a greed policy. And the greed policy is like, hey, let's put as much money as we possibly can into a life insurance policy. And let's, you know, get the lowest death benefit we possibly can, so that we're not being charged that much on insurance, because the insurance charge is only the difference between the death benefit and the cash value. Let's let the cash value grow tax-free, you know, for a decent period of time, 10, 15 years. And then at the end of that 10, 15 year period, let's start taking the cash out of it, you know, tax-free in the form of policy loans that could be zero net interest loans. And let's decrease the face value from whatever it is all the way down as we pull the money out. And what we've accomplished is we put, I'll just use an example. We put $150,000 over 5 to 10 years into an insurance policy. We let it marinate for 10 years. We started taking the money out, you know, at the end of like the 10th year of accumulation. And maybe for 15 years in retirement, we had this tax-free income that could be considered, you know, similar to a Roth, you know, income, tax-free income, if the policy designed properly. Now, I know I'm saying a lot, but young people who have a lot of money in retirement plans might have a future income tax issue. And by using an alternative like an IUL policy, Index Universal Life policy, they may be able to mirror what a Roth IRA could do for them without all the restrictions of a Roth IRA account.
Very good. And that covers quite a bit for millennials there. And again, we're not covering all the questions every generation needs to ask here, but at least two of the essential ones for each generation as we walk through. All right, now we get to Gen Z. So born in 1996 all the way to 2015, that means the younger side of Gen Z is still quite young. But the older part of Gen Z is starting to get into their working years, maybe here in the next year or two, perhaps, right? So let's see, 06, 16. No, they're already in there. That's right. So I forgot what year it was, Charles. I was a decade behind there for a moment.
Oh, jeez.
All right. So if Gen Z is at the early stage of their professional and financial journey or not even started, there are just lots of questions probably on how to get started once they have the opportunity to do so. So first question for them would be, do I need to start saving for retirement now, even though it's so many years away? I'm sure when you start getting those first paychecks, it's a lot more tempting to get that money in the bank versus in an account you're not going to touch for 60 years.
Right. Well, I would say this. I mean, obviously, at that age, you want to make sure, you know, if you're married and you have kids, that you have adequate life insurance. I mean, you need that need policy, you know, the one that's going to pay a nice death benefit to your surviving spouse and kids, you know, to make sure that they can still live in the house that you currently live in and maybe go to the, you know, college that, you know, eventually you and your spouse want them to go to. So I would say, you know, before you start saving for retirement, just make sure you have adequate insurance, the right amount, the right kind, you know, and you know, it's, that's part of your budget. Then I would consider, if you do have children, maybe setting up some 529 plans. And right now, college is like being questioned as, is it a true value? I mean, I'm not going to answer that because I don't really know. I haven't been to college in the last like 40 years or so. But for the most part, the 529 plans allow you to save tax-free as long as that money's used for, you know, education. It doesn't have to be college. It could be like an elementary school, you know, a private school, a high school, that type thing. They open up the rules to that. And also, Walter, what a lot of people might not realize is that as long as that account's open for 15 years, the owner of that account's allowed to convert that, you know, for the sake of the beneficiary, which, you know, normally would be a child or a grandchild, to a Roth IRA, right, which is amazing. So you could have like a 529 plan set up today that you're funding. The child, you know, decides not to go to college and, you know, you can convert it to a Roth IRA over a certain period of time. So when do I need to start saving for retirement? I would make sure that A, you got adequate insurance, B, you start setting the kids' education funds up, and then C, you know, that would be the last thing to do because you got plenty of time, but I would just start putting something in, as you mentioned earlier on this podcast, if your employer has a matching program, put up to the company match, you know, at a minimum to get that free money.
All right, great point there, Charles. Last one, and this is, again, for Generation Z. We'll throw this one into the mix. How can I start saving for retirement when I have student loan debt, and how do you balance the two?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, I don't like debt. And for the most part, you can only write off about $2,500 a year of interest from the student loan debt. And the interest rates, I believe, are relatively high on a lot of these like student loans. So I'm a proponent for like, hey, paying that debt down as soon as you possibly can and postpone, you know, funding your retirement. But that's just my personal opinion. Someone else might say, hey, 75% of your dollars should go to paying down the debt, 25% for you know, retirement, or 60-40 or 50-50. But I just don't like student loan debt. I got a couple of young clients that are attorneys that have a lot of student loan debt. And I think with what went through over the last couple of years with the government thinking about, you know, eliminating some of it or, you know, whatever, they're hoping that, you know, they don't have to pay it. But it's like, you know what, I think you're eventually going to have to pay it. So don't let the interest accrue forever and a day. Start paying it down and maybe focus on that more so than focusing on your retirement.
All right. Thank you, Charles, for the great information on all these generations and what they need to be thinking about. And I'm curious, do you specialize in working with one of these or two of these generations? Or do you have, you know, like if a millennial comes to you, are you working with a millennial? Or are you typically sending them to work with somebody else? Or will you work with all generations? Should people be looking for an advisor that just specifically maybe specializes in working with their generation? Or does it not really break down that way?
Yeah, so I think, like, you know, my practice in the past and even currently is really focused towards, you know, the baby boomers, the people that, you know, are looking to retire or are retired and, you know, need a plan or just need someone to really, like, you know, kind of shed some light on where they are and where they're going. However, you know, with that said, I have two employees that I'm training to be lead advisors within 5 years. And, you know, what my goal is like, obviously they're working on plans for the baby boomers or, you know, behind the scenes, but I want them to reach out to their generation for the people that are successful, making good money and maybe maximizing what they're putting in their 401ks that have additional resources to maybe look at them as a potential clients that would be interested in, like what I spoke about earlier on this podcast, IUL, Index Universal Life, a wonderful opportunity to maybe set up a retirement plan if it's structured properly to give them tax-free income. So I would say right now, 85-90% of our practice is geared towards the baby boomers, maybe only 10% for the millennials, or Generation X rather. But you know, I'm hoping that fast forward 3 to 5 years from now, with the development of my two employees, Alex and Tara, that we'll be a little bit more open to maybe helping the younger generations, because they just don't teach this stuff in school, Walter.
Yeah, yeah. The younger generations, I think, need the help, need the advice and the guidance. So that's great that you have a structure in place to start helping those additional generations as well. But certainly the bread and butter being those who are a little bit more urgent about their retirement preparation. And that's the baby boomers, and slowly becoming the Generation X as well over the next several years. So good to hear all that, Charles. And if you are, no matter what generation you're in, if you're looking for advice, guidance, or have questions, or maybe you know somebody in a different generation that might need to hear this episode, please share it with them or pass along Charles's information so they can get in touch and ask questions that might be on their mind. The number to call to get in touch with Charles and begin your conversation, or to point somebody else in the right direction so that they can get down the right path, is 610-388-7705. 610-388-7705, or go online to cpweldygroup.com. That's cpweldygroup.com, and begin your retirement planning journey today with a complimentary consultation with Charles. Charles, appreciate all the help. Good luck if you pull out the golf clubs for the first time before the next time we chat, and on your first round of the year, perhaps coming up soon here, and the rest of tax season as well. And we'll be chatting with you again soon.
Thank you, Walter. Appreciate it.
Very good. That's Charles. I'm Walter. We'll see you next time right back here on Reengineering Your Finances. Financial planning and advisory services are offered through Prosperity Capital Advisors, PCA, an SEC-registered investment advisor with its principal place of business in the state of Ohio. CP Weldy Group and PCA are separate, non-affiliated entities. PCA does not provide tax or legal advice. Insurance and tax services offered through CP Weldy Group are not affiliated with PCA. Information received from this podcast should not be viewed as individual investment advice. Product discussions and illustrations are hypothetical in nature and will vary based on many factors, including but not limited to age, health, product, insurance carrier, and product design. You should consult the insurance carrier website and policy for detailed information. Content may have been created by a third party and was not written or created by a PCA-affiliated advisor and does not represent the views or opinions of PCA or its subsidiaries. For information pertaining to the registration status of PCA, please contact the firm or refer to the Investment Advisor Public Disclosure website, www.advisorinfo.sec.gov. For additional information about PCA, including fees and services, send for our disclosure statement as set forth on Form ADV from PCA using the contact information herein. Please read the disclosure statement carefully before you invest or send money.